When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial For All Mankind podcast on Apple TV Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about season 3, episode 8, titled The Sands of Ares. Aaron, what did you think of this episode?
I thought this was a great episode. I thought, I don't like disasters, obviously, but I do think that this show excels at showing very smart, driven, capable, and equipped people responding to them. And mm-hmm. It's always thrilling. I like the human side of what was going on. You know, the poor Amber and Jimmy and Karen on the ground. I like Ed and Danny being locked up. And I'm feeling a little bit different about Danny. Not that I never okay. thought that he was. I always thought he was kind of the victim, obviously, of Karen's. Cougarish predations, but mm-hmm. boy, this episode here framed him as just a really tragic figure that has been bearing guilt and shame for something he did as a child and never has talked about or acknowledged. And I felt like I was right there with Ed, man. Like, he just wanted to comfort the poor boy. But I mean, it's one of those things where it doesn't exactly wipe the slate clean, but it does it does contextualize them. I thought this episode was another incredible one. What'd you think?
Yeah, no, I think the Danny and Ed stuff is borderline brilliant. Emotionally, it takes me to a place with Danny I honestly didn't think I could get. And they do it all with stuff that we could have or should have seen and understood in the past. Like, his relationship with Shane was very important in shaping who he was, especially, you know, now that we know exactly the nature of that relationship. But I think we had inclinations or indications rather earlier on. Him explaining to Ed just like how he did all these terrible things to Shane and the guilt he must have felt. It did a remarkable job of connecting Ed and Danny emotionally, because Ed felt the same way, right? Like the I love the stuff with the suits in the hab here, where like first Danny doesn't want to get in the suit. He's like, what's the point? And then Ed changes his mind.
So fucking ugly.
Suit.
Might as well die looking awesome.
Right. I'm not going out like this. And then Ed doesn't want to get in the suit after that, but it's because he's kind of realized how horrible he's been to the people in his life. And you know, he's obviously having like a moment here where he's lost objectivity and the true scope of his life. But like, there is a connection there where they understand each other on a fundamental level. And I think that to me did so much to sympathize Danny as a character. And I thought it was great. Really great.
Yeah, and I feel like this guy does a really good job of playing this kind of haunted, tragic quality. He's been such a giant gaping asshole, but like, you know, there's a lot going on here. And also, I want to shout out a scene partner, Joel Kinnaman. This show has completely changed my mind of what he is capable of. We talked about in second season that scene in the living room with Kelly and Karen, where Kelly says, you know, she's going to Annapolis. Like, he's got a lot of range, and what he was doing there, where he's really, you know, dealing with the fact that if he dies, if it's the last time he spoke to his daughter, that he was dismissive and combative with her, just like he was with his 13-year-old son right before he got killed. That's a lot for a dad to take, man. And I thought he was really and then going from that kind of self-pity to genuine empathy for poor Danny and what he's been through. It's so funny because like when we were watching this, we're watching it as a family. My kid's big time and now watching For All Mankind ahead of everybody else. But it's, he loves this show, and we're all watching, and I notice how transfixed my family is during this scene. And I'm like, man, these dumb fuckers are going to forget that explosion is about to go off and watch them get sucked into it. And then another 3-4 minutes went by, and I got sucked into it. Where I, so like, we all three like jumped when that explosion went off, because I got so wrapped up in their conversation and their connection that I myself forgot that, obviously. And it happens at the most like pin drop moment, where he's about to spill his beans on the Karen situation. And
and I love this setup, because there's a plausible out here for Danny. If what I think is going to happen is that, you know, Ed's going to come to him and say, hey, that thing that you said you needed to tell me about before we were both going to die, what was that? And Danny can say, he's got two options, right? He can tell him about Karen, or he could go with the, what I think is the easier out, which is probably the route he'll take, and say, I took my eye off the ball for the drilling thing. There's a real confession he can make here that does not involve Karen. So I don't know what they're going to do with that. I assume they're going to have him not tell Ed, but we'll
there, the thing is like, man,
because now he's got this before, trauma with Nick too, right? Like, right. That's the other thing.
Because I was about to say that, like, before it turned out that, you know, Danny got so sympathetic in the final moments of this episode, I was, like, kind of afraid that Danny was going to try to pin everything on Nick.
Oh, God.
Because who the fuck would know otherwise?
Tell no tales. And I was super worried when Nick showed up dead, because I'm like, God, Danny's going to get off scot-free with this bullshit.
That's what I thought. And I'm a little afraid that now that Ed feels even more sorry for Danny, that what's going to happen is Danny's going to try to confess, and Ed's going to be like, here's what you do. Nick dropped the ball. Like, you know, we're going
to live
this
with that guilt, but
we're going
to
put this
career
on Nick, and we'll save your career. Exactly. And it's another time where Danny could hit rock bottom, but I hope not. I hope that this is rock bottom. Jesus Christ. So much death. And I felt like they dealt with everyone appropriately. Like, Nick was enough of a character at this moment that I felt bad for him. They're so good at taking little moments, like her bonding with Nick over the puppy to make us feel, was it Isabel, the Cuban astronaut? Cosmonaut. And you know, then Peloton, of course,
right?
Alexi.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I was really emotionally affected by the end of this episode, you know, with the Danny and Ed stuff, and then Kelly just bereft
honestly, the Jimmy stuff. I was surprised how emotional it got down on the planet too. And of course, it's an emotional situation, but for me as a viewer, like, I was surprised how much impact just seeing Amber and Jimmy have that moment together when they realize their brother and or husband is going to be safe. It was really affecting.
Even though Jimmy's a big, giant piece of shit, he loves his brother.
Kind of because he is, right? Like, it almost works more because he's being a shit through that whole episode, because then you connect it with the trauma that Danny has, right? And then you're seeing the parallels between the two. And of course, Jimmy has a lot of trauma, right? He's just the one who rebelled against being the person that everybody told him he should be. So he's like an equal and opposite thing going on with his brother. And so that moment was really affecting.
That moment was really affecting. And then, like, of course, you know, Kelly sobbing over her father, and he can do nothing really to comfort her. You know, he tries, but like, it's just a shit situation. I wonder what kind of this is going to do, because it's also clear to me that everyone is going to be in one base now.
Yeah.
And the other shoe that we haven't talked about dropping is as much business as there is between Ed and Danny, there's now business between Danny and Kelly. Like, if Kelly finds out that Danny essentially caused all this, that's going to be a real blow. Because they've always been depicted as being close. You know?
Yeah, they've been neighbors growing up with astronaut parents.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I assumed that they went to Annapolis together, because, like, Danny was a first year, I believe, and she was going to enroll the next year. So they probably palled around a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, you could be right.
And then in NASA, my God, that's a very small community. Then both the astronauts, or at least astronaut candidates. Yeah, as much as I love the space drama, the human drama is what grounds it and makes it all, you know, matter.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Maybe we should get
it's
into
so
the
funny.
Recap.
Because when I looked at this this episode title, you see the Sands of Ares. I'm like, oh, the Sands of War. God, the fucking war, Russians yeah. and Americans are going back at it. And maybe North Korea's single man probe's going to have a pistol, too. It'll be a three nation. And it's not. It's the Sands of Ares are literally the Sands of Mars that almost killed Danny and Ed. That whole landslide was a lot more of a thing than I thought it would be. Like, I guess I didn't really think about how much Mars, how much regolith we're talking about at such a steep angle and at low gravity, how that could flow. And
yeah,
damn,
yeah.
20 meters deep. That's 60 feet for us Americans. That's a lot of digging you'd have to do if it weren't for Dev's fairly elegant solution. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a little pissed that Dev gets like a big moment to shine here. Cause I feel like he's been a shit for the last few episodes and I didn't want him to get this glory, but
yeah, but he's not a full-time shit. Idea. Yeah, no, like that's not. The thing. It's like we're talking about it on the feedback episode, the like, you know, can you have an evil black Elon Musk? And I'm like, I don't even think Elon Musk is evil. I think he's not as smart about nearly as many things as he thinks he is, but he's got that smart, rich, powerful guy in where he assumes that his smartness and domain expertise just translates all domains. I feel like the Dev is the same kind, but like they're not, Dev as portrayed doesn't seem like he is a monster. And it seems like he had a little bit more of a hard scrabble life than Elon's diamond mine daddy did, or ruby mine, emerald mine, whatever fucking precious stone it is.
Yeah.
So yeah,
no, his priorities are just a little out of whack, but.
I like that they humanize Dev a little bit because he is a piece of shit, but he also, he doesn't want his people to die up there.
No. And yeah, I did like that backstory about his dad and, you know, Margo's dad and how they were similar and how, you know, Dev's dad would probably be proud of him having achieved what he achieved.
You would
even
think.
Even with a failure like this, right? So.
He's really competitive. He's always, if you're not first, you're last. And that's why Dev destroyed that monitor, because he
sure.
He really embraces the way of the Ricky Bobby.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question: who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV+, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right. Well, before we talk this episode out, we should probably get to the recap.
Yes.
Let's start off with the team at the NASA HAB in Happy Valley feeling the landslide from the drilling accident, and they're trying to raise Helios on the radio. And when they can't raise him, Danielle decides to go help them as they wait for more information from the orbiting Phoenix, who's about 8 minutes out from their window of opportunity here.
With the benefit of hindsight, I've been kicking around this. Danielle was the best candidate for Mission Commander to Mars, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, she is just so calm, collected, and locked in during all these disasters, and like just like, you know, giving orders like a boss, getting things prepared, keeping her people chilled out. Yeah. Again, I still think it's debatable, and I don't think Molly was committing malpractice when she nominated Ed as the head. But whoo, yeah. Danielle's got the stuff. She's got the right stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of Molly, we haven't seen her in a few episodes. Do you think she's coming back at all this season?
I don't know. I thought she was filming something else. And I mean, even if they did, like, it'll be for like a scene. Because, I don't think she's going to have a set piece. Seems like they had her for two or three episodes. And she's still kicking around. Obviously, she's painting.
To bring her back with, you know, the painting scene. Yeah, all that stuff.
The goo balls. Yeah.
Yeah, but they did not. So probably not coming.
I also like how she took this disaster as an opportunity to settle Will and Roland's beef. Like, this beef, all beef now quashed. And it seems like it worked. Seems like
That's what I love about specifically the NASA astronauts is they get shit done. You know, like when push comes to shove, they can set aside everything that's going on that is petty or unimportant in the moment and just get the job done, especially when it comes to rescuing their fellow astronauts. The camaraderie there is the overpowering force, and I really like that. I will say, NASA, look, if you want to keep people from going over to Helios, you better up the quality of your coffee. That's like that's number one, I feel like, for any scientist, engineer, any person of high importance to the mission needs to have the best possible coffee.
We need French vanilla.
We need hazelnut.
We need a coffee bar
up there in space.
Yeah, it's free. If your mission commander is having her head turned by just a simple French vanilla roast, you got problems, NASA.
That plus 30,000 more a year? Yeah, that'll get the job done.
You can't be throwing just the same packets of Sanka that you freeze dried back in the 60s. You gotta get something different.
I know you have the copyright on Tang, but that's not going to get it done either.
Mm-mm.
Anyway, Peloton pulls himself out of the landslide, but he can't see anything because of all the dust. No one's answering the radio. And then he finds Nick buried in the sand, but when he uncovers him, he's dead.
Like I said, I thought the feels came early because I was also touched by how much the Russians have grown to care for their American counterparts. Like, Peloton is bereft. He's distraught at finding Nick dead, like, you know, weeping, calling his name. I thought that was pretty touching. Also, vomiting in a spacesuit has to be one of the worst things ever. And the rest of the episode, I'm just thinking, his spacesuit smells like vomit. It's I guess you get nose blind to it, but oh my god, can you imagine?
And how do you clean it? Like, so I was all worried about them vomiting from their drinking session in the HAB,
yeah,
which would be bad enough, but your suit, it it hits the helmet, it drips down into the suit. How do you clean that in space? You can't just take it out with a hose.
They got no dry cleaning.
You got no way to clean it.
Nah, that it's going to taste sour. It's going to taste sour for, well, I mean, it is done now. But yeah,
I think you wipe out
maybe
your
they got spares. They got spares
Nick's
for everybody.
Suit. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Take Nick's
I'd
suit.
Rather go the puke suit than the blue suit. Those cosmonaut suits are pretty sweet. I think they're pretty sweet.
Uh-huh. Not bad. Not bad.
They're a lot less bulky, form-fitting. They got the weird hose, but I kind of like that in a retro kind of steampunk way. Just got this big-ass hose connecting to your helmet, man.
Yeah. All right. Ellen and Pam talk about why she really left, and it turns out she knew Ellen would do great things, but now she's angry that she hasn't used her power to change things for people like them, quote-unquote. Eventually, Ellen's pulled away for a developing situation, which we know, of course, is the situation on Mars.
I have no idea where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
Because
this
these
could
are
be
all.
The end of it.
Yeah. Just her going and being kind of rebuffed by her, the love of her life. I don't know. They established that Pam felt something about that, you know? I wonder. Yeah, I don't think this Pam's going to be a big part running forward, but I do wonder if this scandal doesn't bring down the Ellen presidency, and then she retires. Like once she's added, she retires to a quiet life with Pam. But
yeah, it's possible. Of course, you know Larry when she gets back is like, how stupid is this? This is such a bad move. But we all knew that already. I don't know. I kind of don't want this to blow up on her. I want this to just be a moment where they could talk about things and that's it. They don't have to spiral this out, but
it was like half we'll of see. A conversation. It was all just Pam saying, defending herself for lying, quote unquote. I don't know. Cause I haven't seen it again. Although I did watch For All Mankind 3 times between its last airing, the incomplete series, and this, because I watched it once for myself, once with my wife. And then my son's like, oh, a space show I want to watch too. Mm-hmm. But I got the clear opinion that Pam and Larry were kind of in the right, that Ellen, when push comes to shove, would never give up her political career to be happy. And they were just making it easy for her, which I don't know how you feel about that. But
I mean, that's why I love I really like this scene. I think, you know, both these actors are doing a great job. The sentiment of like, yeah, we did a shitty thing for what we think are good reasons, and you might not agree even, you know, long term, but especially in the moment here. I think, yes, it is half conversation, because the other half is an apology that Ellen wants, that she feels she's entitled to, that Pam's not going to give her because she feels she did the right thing. There's a lot of significant looks in this scene and things that go unsaid, but are clearly like, there and they both understand. And I think Ellen just needs a little bit of time to process this, because I think Pam's absolutely right. I think, you know, the squandered potential for Ellen does eat away at her if she stays in that relationship, and probably ruins even the relationship. So, you know, if
she
never gets
presidency,
to have that relationship, then eventually she'll realize that's the right choice.
Because at the end of the day, I think that's what they're getting at is like, if she squandered the opportunity of the squandered opportunity, you know, like if she gets to president and she doesn't actually accomplish anything, maybe net, like it's, you know, she loses a bit of ground. It's one thing to give up the love of your life if you were a president and you're like some kind of era defining, you know, you get healthcare passed or you get gay rights secured for your people, et cetera. But like if you just kind of are seen as a ineffectual kind of triangulating type, what is that? Yeah, I feel like Ellen feels completely different about that, especially if it all gets flushed down by Larry. I mean, that's the other maddening layer to all this, too, and why Larry seems like he's kind of been cut out of the administration.
Uh-huh.
Or he's definitely in the doghouse at the White House.
Right. And this is all still very near, right? It's we need to give it a little time before we can see where all the chips are going to lay, but
probably, yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
It's also like effective use of tension, like how many, like she keeps getting phone calls and we know what it's about and she just keeps on putting off until the Secret Service knocks. I thought that was a nice touch too.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm thinking as she's standing at the door, you know, longing looks, not wanting mm-hmm. to leave. And the Secret Service agent is like looking at his watch. Come on, lady.
Mm-hmm.
How much does he realize what's going on here? And how willing is he to keep his mouth shut? They're pretty good about that, the Secret Service. You don't get a ton of leaks from the Secret Service about anything. So
yeah, yeah.
I think tight-lipped her secret's guys. Safe with him. Yep, absolutely. All right, Peloton finds Luisa through the dust, and she found another dead astronaut. And they're looking around. Everything they built there is gone. I thought in this moment they were trying to make me think that Ed and Danny's mobile hab was destroyed. And I was like, that is not going to work.
Yeah. There's a lot of background, you know, and a lot of people saying, don't worry about that now. It's the most important thing is saving the astronauts. But now that we know the astronauts are saved, or the ones that can be saved are saved, they had the 1M, Sam, it turns out.
Yeah. Just one.
We talked about how fucking crazy that is, but then again, I guess like when is it crazy? You know, when is it crazy to have a single point of failure 300 million miles away? Like if you had two Sams, right. Maybe you should have three. You know, like it.
You only got one Phoenix. Maybe you need two. One crew. Maybe you need two. Yeah.
So we got the M Sam. No more M Sam. No ability to get up and down. Jesus. Okay, I just got thought of a stupid theory. What?
They're stranded.
They're stranded. They also, their fuel factory is destroyed. Now, I questioned a while back why NASA couldn't, use their pre-supplied fuel dump to supply Helios, but no one talked about that very obvious thing, so I wonder if there's a problem with it. Not only are they stranded on the planet, they got no fuel to get Phoenix home either.
Yeah.
This is a big fucking fiasco deal that I don't know how they're going to get out of in just two episodes.
Yeah, and they're relying at this point on the supplies of NASA, which have been, reduced to supply a triple the crew, right? Well, I guess a lot of them are dying off.
Actually, yeah,
it's probably about the crew that they expected to have at this point.
I think for one fairly functional mobile hab and whatever to have NASA's got, that they're fine for now. But like, I don't know what they do for long term food. That's the thing, I guess. Like, you can probably make. They also don't have a fucking well now, do they?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, there's some issue that's brought up in the meeting to save the astronauts that Margo shuts down and is like, well, that's a problem for down the road. I forget what it was. Yeah,
getting them. It was the M-SAM being stranded and, you know, that they now can't get people up and down. Okay. So I don't know how they solve that. I had this crazy theory of like, what if everyone's right about the North Korean? He did make it. He's dead. But he has a capsule capable of like leaving the planet.
The North Korean. North Koreans are going to factor in, man.
No, you know.
Here's the thing. So they've got the
Sojourner's wrecked.
Sojourner. Is it totally wrecked? Is it wrecked to the point where they could not fix that, could not modify it?
It seems like the fusion engines on the bottom might be okay. And those are the one, maybe you could VTOL up and time it to where you arrive with. But the thing is Phoenix is moving up there. You can't just go straight up. You also have to like get speed going the other way. And can they rig it that way? I mean, I just can't see how the back engines fire at all. They're like at a 45 degree angle from where they used to be. Like they don't have the shit needed. The duct tape ain't going to do it this time, Tom Hanks. No. I don't care. Yeah, I don't care how many Ziploc bags and twist ties you got. You're not going to. So, yeah, I don't know. I was trying to think of like what could they do? There's no M's. Can they dig out the M-SAM? And repair it? Is that going to be...
I'm sure they could dig it out. Yeah, it's a matter of can it be repaired with the equipment that they have on hand, right? Because they're not getting any more.
Do they just have to stay like under emergency rations and then NASA and the Russians will go with an emergency... Because I think they can get you know, with slingshots and whatever, they can get a supply there with less than a year from any, essentially any time.
Yeah, yeah, I thought so too. The 2 year window was about what I was looking at, and you know, they're about halfway there, right? So like,
right.
Well, then you got the travel time, right? Or is that window account for like the travel time, or is that just like when they start their mission?
I'm sure they can't leave at the closest approach, because then by the time they got there, Mars is going away. So there must be some kind of synchronized deal. So
I assume there would be a rescue mission on the way.
Yeah, because I don't see them getting out of there with the stuff that they have on hand. I could be surprised. Mm-hmm. Like I said, maybe they could put their heads together and rig up Sojourner just to make a trip up somehow. But man, it seems really hard.
Yeah, I mean, with all this talk about, you know, failure that Dev and Margo are doing, I wonder if this is just, you know, the first attempt to get a foothold on Mars is a failure. And you know, Margo was talking with Sergey about that too, right? Like,
yeah,
how many probes they sent down, how many, you know, times they tried to land on Mars and was unsuccessful. This could be, you know, this season is just a failure.
Does anyone make it off?
Yeah, I think you could pull your.
Okay,
your
I was trying to think back, of like define failure, or like this the colony doesn't thrive, or like everyone dies, yeah. Or
and like none of the equipment is salvageable down there. It's just like I don't know. In my opinion, a single mobile hab does not a foothold on Mars make. But I don't know. We have that on the moon too with Jamestown. Look how that started. So.
Well, NASA's base is more than that. I mean, NASA's base is pretty, you know, it's not nothing. Although, hear me out. If no one makes it off of Mars alive, it's a great time to refresh the NASA era.
The cast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, totally. Like, you essentially could just have an entirely new crop of astronauts. You could have a couple of, like, you know, like, he'll keep carrying around and, like, you know, for... because she's going to get all into private space probably. Like, I'm not saying get rid of, but like this would be a clean mm-hmm. break where you could have a younger, more dynamic cast going forward. Gets rid of the old guard astronauts. We're probably going to jump forward another 10, 15 years anyway.
Ed's not coming.
It's tidy, but I just don't know if this season is going to be that heavy.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I do know that Ron Moore loves his high drama.
Has he ever done a total party wipe?
I don't recall that, but
I mean, that's the question. Like, yeah, I get it. He likes the drama, but my God, he's going to kill everybody.
All right. Phoenix tells Danielle that they're in contact now that, Hab 2 is responding, but they're not sure if there are other survivors. They say, we'll keep you updated. And then they examine this expanding or I don't know if it's expanding, but the massive dust cloud and start looking for survivors.
Yeah, there's a couple scenes where they really show the bleakness when Alexei's out on the surface and it's an immediate aftermath and dust is so thick you can barely see 10 feet in front of you. And then when all that clears, it's just the Helios mission has just been wiped off the face of Mars, man. It's like they don't. It looks like they were never there. There's no like things poking out or it's terrifying.
Then we move over to NASA, where Karen and Bill suggest that Helios, or sorry, not NASA, we're at Helios. They suggest that Helios goes to NASA for help, and the rest of the team agrees. And then she says she's going to make house calls to the families of the missing astronauts. And Dev promises Karen that he will do everything in his power to find Ed. I like this move from Karen. This feels like this is a very good bit of writing from two characters who have very different perspectives on the situation. Karen, who has been through all this before as the family of an astronaut who's been in peril, and Bill, who's never experienced what she's experienced and doesn't get how traumatic this can be for the families, right? He doesn't even have a family of his own. So like, he's like, oh yeah, we'll just call him up on the phone and it'll be fine, whatever. Somebody else can handle that. Karen's like, no, I need to go there and be with these people because they are wrecked right now.
It also honors their, like, her pedigree, her heritage, because that's what she used to do as a NASA wife, you know, like when someone is in danger, it's some people did it for her. She's keeping up the example of Deke's wife. And honestly, she can't really do much at this point. Like, her talent is like human resources and negotiating. Well, you can't fucking negotiate with a natural disaster. It's time for the engineers. And what she can do is support the people that are scared at home. And that's what she does. I thought it was, like I said, I don't hate Karen. She just had a terrible lapse in judgment and a little bit immature, but you know, she came by it all. Exactly. And she came by all that honestly, you know.
She does. So, yeah, she did. And I feel like there is a very good scene in this episode with her and Jimmy later on that I really liked, where she owns up to a little bit of that, but
yep,
we'll get there.
Yeah.
So Danny tends to Ed's wound, and it turns out they're buried under the surface and low on oxygen, but their emergency beacon is working, which is good news. Ed's got a hole in his gut, and the bad news is there's no exit wound. So it's still, that shrapnel's in there somewhere. Danny bandages him up, and we see that they are very much not visible from the surface.
I don't know if that's common knowledge, but like, yeah, you don't like foreign objects inside the human body. You'd much rather a clean in and out, and then having something in there festering.
I couldn't help but think that Danny enjoyed causing a little bit of pain on Ed here as he was pressing on his wound. I'm like, is he liking this a little too much?
I thought that he is mostly in just feel terrible mode until he gives up, and then he doesn't care anymore and he starts fighting. But like, I didn't see much. I felt like he just feels terrible. Like, this is literally all his fault. He's already fucked this guy's wife. Like, now he's going to kill him. I don't know. Maybe so. If you saw some demented glee, then
just a hint,
a hint,
or at least maybe I brought that to the scene, assuming that he would feel that. But
it's a lot. The LaCroix of sadism, just
the essence,
just a whiff,
the essence of
pleasure, a drop or two.
All right, Dev brings NASA up to speed on the status of the Helios equipment. Apparently, the MSAM and HAB 1 are buried, but no major damage to HAB 2. However, without the MSAM, they are unable to bring any equipment down from orbit, and the crew is stranded on the surface. And Marga says their first mission is to find the people. Deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's. A lot of these scenes are very expositional. Just Margo keeping her people on task, keeping them cool the fuck out. She's not a bad leader in a crisis situation either.
And I'm always super excited to see scenes like this in the show, because the number one scenes that I love in Apollo 13 are the scenes where they're putting together the CO2 filter with duct tape and the hoses, and they're engineering to solve a crisis. I just love that engineers could get in there in the heat of the moment and make a difference. That's so cool.
Yeah, and it's such a refreshing change of pace from our dated. Like, I feel like human beings are designed to work, not maybe in a crisis, but like at one problem at a time. And in modern day, we have like 100 things we're supposed to be doing all the fucking time simultaneously. So like, it's hard to get any one thing. But like, man, being in a situation like this, like, your mind is all you can do is focus on the problem in front of you. You can't like, also, by the way, we can't leave Mars. Well, someone's going to die from lack of air in 5 hours. So how about we save 6 months problems for 6 months from now? It's, I don't know. It seems like everybody's talking about living in the moment. It forces you to. And I think it's thrilling to see human beings in a positive manner work to overcome this stuff together, especially over like 300 million miles. You know?
Yeah, no, that's super cool. And I just love that, like, from a storytelling perspective, it's fresh, right? It feels good, because normally you've got the hero who's got muscles on top of muscles going in and punching a bunch of stuff to solve the problem. This is the exact opposite. Their muscles are the brains, and they're punching an invisible enemy that you can't see, but you know is there.
Like the forbidden planet. Yeah. You can just see its outline when it steps on the security fence.
Yeah, no, I love scenes like this. Maybe because I'm a nerd, and I like to think that nerds make a difference.
As much as sometimes eggheads do get to be cool, and I feel like NASA astronauts embody that. Like whether it's in real life when you see Apollo 13 type stuff, whether it's fake Mark Watney shit from The Martian, like they have a. You know, not since like the old Age of Sail days, they have this like can do, must do spirit, because if they don't, they're gonna die.
Yeah.
You know, like there ain't any, there's no tow truck. There's no roadside assistance. There's no, you know, thing that's going to come collect them. Like they either, you know, science this shit or they're going to die. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it's great.
All right. Danielle's team arrives at Hab 2. They are working on fixing comms and they know that Ed and Danny could be trapped in Hab 1. Just quick scene there.
A big change in of heart. We talked about how this Russian guy's had a hard time respecting Danielle, but I think he sees her charging to the rescue in her rovers, and she's got a slightly different opinion. You know, like he's genuinely glad to see her. Yeah, and I mean, again,
I kind of expected him to be more laissez-faire about this whole thing, given that the two astronauts that are still out there are NASA or well Helios. They're not Russian, but yeah, he's all right. He's doing his best here to care about these not Russian astronauts.
And I do, to be fair, I do think that like we, even though like just three episodes ago he was like being a massive asshole to Danielle and being very unhelpful, and like two episodes ago they had a drunken rager, a vodka fuel rager, where they said a whole bunch of stuff and another thing to each other. Mm-hmm. But like they have been spent what, probably 6 months together at this point, and I feel like, as demonstrated through Lexi especially, you have to be a real son of a bitch the way not a many people are, especially people who are together enough to like make it through a space program. You have to be a real son of a bitch to not care about people in this situation. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he is. I don't think many people are. Yeah. So I don't think it's crocodile tears so much as mm-hmm. he genuinely probably sees her in an entirely new light.
Sure. All right. Back in Hab 1, the buried Hab 1, Ed realizes Danny is going into withdrawal. And Danny's being a negative Nancy, and Ed is not too happy about it. He's all like, yeah, we're going to die. We might as well give up. That kind of stuff.
Danny going at Ed's anabolic steroid use.
Right, as if it's the same thing.
It's kind of lame. Like, I was like, if this is the entire reason we've been seeing Ed shoot stuff in his butt all season, not worth. But, I mean, it's not bad. It's just... It feels like something. It feels like a little anticlimactic. That like, oh, this is just so Danny can do a sick burn, which we understand is not a sick burn. It's kind of pathetic.
Yeah. No, I don't know if they're going to bring that into the forefront ever. But honestly, yeah. I don't really care if they do. It's what, 4 seconds of screen time with him shooting up twice. No big deal.
It's why he bailed on Mars. It's not that he was scared that he's going to kill Gordo's son. It's just his nuts have shrunken down to the size of raisins. He's got no no huevos, no grampas no more. They're all gone with the roids, man.
Uh-huh. They'll do that to you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Peloton and Louisa arrive at Hab 2. They try to help plot a path to Hab 1 and agree to go out to look for them. And Kelly decides to join. On Earth, the joint team also attempts to plot a path to Hab 1. Danielle has them hook up their ground-penetrating radar up on Mars to a rover and use it to search for the buried Hab. Also important, the radio is fixed.
Yeah, the doctor coming through.
Yeah, a ship doctor and a body doctor.
It's like Dr. Crusher, you know, mm-hmm. when she goes to work on Data, you know?
Yep.
You got the, yep. They're all bodies, radio antennas. They're all machines, you know.
Yeah.
Get the work. Get the work, Doc.
Dual positronic neural networks and doctoring degree that she got.
Hypo spray, socket wrench. It's all mm-hmm. the same. A little bit of good news coming in. At what point did you start being worried for Peloton?
It was when he started taking the aspirin, and I'm like, oh, he's clearly got a concussion. Clearly.
Yeah.
And then found out it was much worse later. But yeah, it was then.
Yeah. I was still shocked that he was dead. I thought it was already going to be crazy enough that they're going to drill holes in his head and do that kind of shit. But like, it was genuinely shocking. Like, I know this can happen. Like, that's mm-hmm. the thing about having a head trauma is like, you really aren't out of it fully for a day or two, you know?
Yeah, you don't want holes drilled in your head in the best of times, and certainly not in space.
Right. Right.
That's words of wisdom to live your life by. Don't get holes drilled in your head in space.
A Soviet doctor using helium, are these the drills that he's used? Maybe they're all the same, but like I feel like
they're the same drills he used to repair the radio. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. it's the same one they're drilling the explosives with. Like, maybe that's why he died. It's like, Like what I'm saying is he's at this hab that may or may not be equipped with a med bay. Certainly not the med bay that he's familiar with. I don't know.
Yeah. Hab 2 was definitely the one with the medical supplies. I think they mentioned that in the last episode.
Okay, cool. So like, hab 1's fucked.
He had the best care he could have in this situation, but it was not enough. Yeah. That's true.
I mean, they're operating in the middle of an island there, just like a utility table.
Oh, yeah. No supplies from Phoenix. Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We go over to Danny's family as they watch the news, and Karen shows up at their house with a big bag of groceries. And Jimmy says the official story is bullshit and runs off to his bedroom to pout. And then Karen makes dinner with Danny's wife.
I get that. Look, it's distasteful. I remember the first day of the Russian invasion where they're showing like a Ukrainian city with the sirens going off, and then CNN cuts to fucking Applebee's trying to sell you hot wings and beer. And it's always just like, Jesus Christ. Sometimes you're just how gross society can be as a shoved in your face. And you know, like, oh, the astronauts are buried beneath, and who knows, and they might all die, but next let's tell you about Stelebris and how to make your dick hard. Like, I get it, but on the other hand, what is Jimmy going on? What does he think the cover-up is here?
That's the thing. I saw this coming with his friends, and I thought, okay, maybe, you know, has he been indoctrinated enough to just spin this himself, right, into conspiracy territory?
Yeah.
And it turns out he had. But the whole scene here and subsequent scenes make it seem just so pathetic, right? Like,
right.
Jimmy's broken, and he doesn't want to acknowledge that. Instead, he wants to think the world is broken. And he sends himself to bed without dinner in this episode, right? Like, he's literally a child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that they were almost like showing his regression of him just like, yeah, and running up the stairs. And like you said, throwing himself in his own bedroom.
Yeah.
But it's like, I guess that's a danger of conspiratorial thinking. And that's the trap. Like, every once in a while, you'll be right there. It's not like there hasn't been open conspiracies even perpetrated by high levels of the government. It's just that, like, once you start thinking that anything could be a conspiracy, literally anything could be a conspiracy. And then you're just like, you know, you've divorced yourself from the real world. And because I said, it's like, okay, well, the Russians and Helios are saying we're drilling for water. They go drill for water. Drilling for water caused a collapse. Does he think that, like, the Russians and Helios are working on, like, a fucking nuclear missile?
Or that they found like intelligent life on Mars, and there's a battle raging.
Yeah, there's like fucking tripods at vaporizing people, and they're just like, don't want it to. Like, it's insane. Yeah, like, I was like, what? What? I mean, I get years down the road if something mysteriously happens, because God knows what they've done. But like, they're just in the, you know, fucking wagons, the Oregon stage, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have the shit, the setup to do bad, I guess. I just thought it was sad. It's sad. And I'm glad it didn't keep him from having this human connection by the end.
Yes. And I hope that kind of kicks him out of this gear that he's been in, the conspiratorial gear. But we'll see, because the other crucial part of this is he hasn't interfaced with his friends on this issue yet. And I feel like they've
been shocking.
The negative influence in his life currently. So,
yeah,
does this growth or whatever this is all just revert once he gets back with his friends?
Well, do you think that I was going to say, like, do you think there's a possibility that they don't see that they need him anymore? But like, I don't know what they did. They stole a statue.
They have a badge.
Like,
they have somebody's
badge.
Yes,
and they have a badge. And I'm sure that they can never use that badge again, because they're going to quickly track how that happened. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't. I was kind of surprised they didn't show up.
I don't think we said this last episode, but they do they even need that badge to get that statue? Like that was out
at night. At night, they definitely do. Yeah, I think NASA's like closed. Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah, the Johnson Space Center, because that's the literally front door of. I imagine you have to go through a checkpoint just as a visitor. Maybe
you're
not.
Probably right. Probably,
but
right.
Like to get to the actual building, I at nighttime when you're like,
how the hell you can, that guy's badge get you through?
Well, the I gate? Also, well, because he's the he's a high ranking astronaut. They can come down, I'm sure, anytime.
Yeah, like, but they don't have him. They have a picture of him on a card.
Oh, I thought it was just like they probably just like swipe it at and the arm goes up, and you know, it's. I don't think it's like armed Marine security. It's just like.
Oh, no physical guard presence? Interesting.
Not I don't know. You're, because the other question I had is like, okay, so they're at the building. They got their truck. They're backing up. Is that statue just there? Was it bolted down? Did they have like power equipment? There's got to be guard. There's people in that building 24/7. Mission control is 24/7. Uh-huh. Like, I'm just seeing like they got an angle grinder. There's like 12 feet of spark shooting out like a goddamn glowing rooster. Yeah. How did that happen?
I don't know. They got it.
Best not to think too hardly about it, I guess. What a lame stunt. Where does that get them? Anyway.
I know. I don't know what their role is going to be going forward, but I hope it's without Jimmy, whatever the case.
Same.
Because I don't dislike Jimmy. I want Jimmy to be happy, but he's on a bad path.
I can see why Jimmy is the way Jimmy is, for sure.
Yes. All right, let's go back over to Kelly and Peloton driving to the Hab 1 site. Peloton has a headache that he can't shake. He's taking aspirin. Kelly worries aloud about Ed, and Peloton does his best to comfort her with a story about his own father. And then they pick up Hab 1's emergency beacon signal on the radio. I knew he had a concussion at this point. It was obvious. I didn't realize how bad it was, though.
Yeah, they talk, people might not recall, but Alexei Leonov is the real-life first person who ever did a spacewalk in space, and he was selected to be the first man the Russians were going to put on the moon, but that program was canceled after NASA successfully landed someone back in 1969. Even with that accomplishment, he was twice awarded Hero of the Soviet Union, two Orders of Lenin, one of the most decorated astronauts, and just died back in 2019. He's easily the most famous Russian cosmonaut living, and his fame landing on the moon. So I just wanted to, I just think it's cool that we don't know. The previous generation astronauts seemed like they were a lot of them serving under duress. Remember when they were getting their cheeseburgers and their whiskey, and they're talking about like they just got like, hey, you're a test pilot, now you're an astronaut. It seems like even though those guys it was compulsory, it has inspired legions of comrades to step forward and continue it. Is this as inspiring in Russia to be as it was here in America? And we don't we rarely see that. Soviet side, you know?
Margo says they can't dig that out by hand. They don't have time. Implores her team to come up with a better solution. And then she notices Dev is missing from this meeting room and goes off to find him. And once she leaves, Aleda asks Bill if the Russians ever mentioned Margo, apparently only in passing. And it's nothing that he found suspicious or anything.
Do you think the ball buster is enough to throw Aleda off a trail? Because like,
no.
Yeah. Nah, I think
she's
Aleda,
keep digging.
I think she's pretty locked on too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't as like, oh no, they think she's great. They call her the easy lady. No. Yeah. that would have been bad. But I also like Margot's fucking face when she noticed Dev isn't there. Like she just smelled the world's stinkiest, eggiest fart. I can't. It's so hard to take Margo after everything that's happened this season seriously. Like I used to enjoy her getting into high dudgeon about whatever, but like now it's like calm the fuck down. You've made some mistakes.
Yes. Yeah. Graver mistakes than walking out of a meeting, an important meeting. I don't know. I do like a lot of the stuff that they're doing in this episode with Margo, especially. Once it's all over, there's a moment that Margo has that we can talk about that I really loved. Because it's bittersweet.
I know what you're talking about.
So yeah, let's take Margot over to Dev. She finds him. He's sitting in the observation room at Mission Control there, trying to free his mind is the best way I can describe it. And they talk about his father's obsession with NASA and how he was just absolutely destroyed by an engineering accident that he was partially at fault for. Afterward, Margot leaves Dev to continue thinking.
You recall this is the incident that stranded Ed, Gordo, and Danielle up on the moon for so long. That's why they went space crazy. Gotcha. And it turns out, like, 'cause there was this minor thing of, I forget who it was, like, tracking down, like, who was at fault. And all this stuff is, like, an aha moment because, it turns out poor Dev's dad was scapegoated, it sounds like, you know? Unless he was the dude that just fucked it all up, or maybe it's just like the NASA wasn't going to use that. Yeah, who knows? But the end result is that one, how connected everything is in the show. That one mistake had a huge effect on Dev, and you know, was a real setback to the family. His dad went from being a NASA engineer, well, I guess not a NASA engineer, but a guy working on parts that's a part of Saturn V, something he took a great pride from, to now he's driving cabs and still supporting his son. At least Dev's got an honest kind of came from nothing story. I got to say that about him.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose so. His parents might have come from nothing. You know, he's the son of a fairly well-regarded engineer who works on space-related stuff, so he probably knows a few people. Pulls a few strings, but
do you think he can pull, like, do you think the man whose firm got fired by NASA in disgrace could pull strings, really?
He died
before he gets to college, or no, before he graduated college.
So you're right, maybe not. Maybe he does come from nothing a little more than we thought. But I like Margot's, you know, idea here that, like, his father would have been proud of him regardless, right? Okay, he's got a failure under his belt, or that his father wouldn't have wanted the same fate for him, right? The one failure in a string of successes causes him to just lose all faith in himself and be a broken man for the rest of his life. It's not what his father would have wanted for him, so.
No, but I also wonder what's going on with Helios, because we saw that Helios was already draining a lot of money from the company before it turned into an unmitigated disaster. So,
yeah, his board's not going to be happy about any of this.
I was actually kind of shocked that he didn't turn on Karen. I thought at one point that he might just completely turn, like, you know, I'm so fucking glad I got the great Ed Baldwin to personally supervise my shit so that he can manage all these disasters, because it seems like Danielle Poole's always riding to the rescue to bail his shit out. But that hasn't ever happened. And I think it'd be a fair argument. It's entirely possible that if Ed Baldwin wasn't a mission commander, none of this would have ever happened.
Because of Danny, yeah.
It would have been an automated, you know, the ship's things had been automated. They'd probably have a command. They certainly wouldn't have. Danny wouldn't be on this mission. That's the thing. That's the biggest indictment against Ed as mission commander, is he brought Danny, and Danny is the one that's fucked everything up.
Yeah, Danny does not have the right stuff. He's got the wrong stuff. So, yeah, I mean, without Ed, Danny's not there, and there's no beef, certainly, with the commander and Danny, so.
Exactly. And, you know, hell, if Ed hadn't brought Danny, he might have been the first person on Mars. Everything would have been. They would be drinking, you know, Martian seltzer water. And everybody would be awesome, but
I need, I guess, more scenes like this or more insight into Dev, because I think Dev is the most strangely written character in this show. And I can't tell if it's like he's poorly written or if he's just an enigma for the sake of it. But you're right. I'm like, half the time I'm shocked by the statements he makes or the decisions he makes or his reaction to things. And half the time I'm like, okay, I think I get this guy. And I can't tell if that's good writing or bad writing.
Yeah.
With everybody else, well, I feel I think pretty grounded. But he's because the thing one is card.
I think about a lot of it is I'm not sure how aware he is of his bullshit. Uh-huh. You know, like I think he kind of knows that he's manipulating people and the but like maybe I don't. I, yeah, I'm not exactly sure how full of shit he is. And it seems like he's got some chops to him, too.
Uh huh. Totally. Yeah. He's Lava got tube. Ideas.
Brilliant.
Sure. Yeah. I just wish I understood him more and I could maybe understand why he makes the decisions he makes.
Gotcha.
All right, Karen and Amber have dinner. Karen answers a phone call with news that they've located Have One. That's pretty good information. Jimmy comes out of his room for that news, but goes right back in afterward.
Mm-hmm. Fake news, NASA. You're just giving us false hope. Beacons. You want me to believe there's beacons on Mars? Who put them there? The Martians. Nice try, Karen.
Here's the bigger conspiracy is what does Karen need with a giant bag of groceries when all she's making is spaghetti?
I wondered how you as an Italian man felt about the spaghetti because it looks like the same shit she was slinging at the outpost. It's not very impressive.
Yeah, like, okay, you might need a whole bag of groceries if you're going to create the sauce from scratch, but I got to believe she just bought a bottle of something, right? Like there's
or maybe she was only
the
making
point of it was to distract Amber, so maybe they did spend hours making
plus
dinner.
like maybe she made SpaghettiOs to cater to Ed's kid palate because Ed the Yorker he likes a freeze-dried parm too and she was trying to push it, so maybe she's gone fucking gourmet since the divorce,
sure,
and she's really, you know, serving some high class noodles with gravy.
Porcini mushrooms. She's cooking up a meat-based sauce herself. Yeah.
Yeah, slicing the garlic so fine it liquefies when it hits the oil. Yeah, doing it all right.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Ellen returns to the White House and tells Larry that she went to see Pam, and he is appropriately worried about how that might look if it was discovered, but Ellen does not want to hear it based on
I know it's appropriate worry, but how are people this stupid? How are people this unaware of
Things like, they're saying to other people and how that's going to be perceived? Yeah.
Yes. In context of your own actions and whatnot. Uh-huh. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think Larry's stupid, but scenes like this make him really stupid.
Yeah, for sure. And she thinks so, and he gets dismissed from the room when her VP and some admin guy, I don't remember his name, come in.
Yes.
Yeah. He's being cut out, but for how long? You know, well, is he also a heat of the moment thing or what?
Also, this whole gee whiz, isn't it? It's so awesome that something has pushed me out of the news cycle. And by the time this is resolved, I'll be old news and no one, you know, like it was super like, yeah, is Larry just beyond the pale or is this kind of poorly written? Because like, I just can't believe a guy that smart would say something under these circumstances. It's like he put one foot in his mouth. So it's like, oh, to distract that other foot right in there. And the same is about astronauts to Ellen. Mm-hmm. It's insane. It's insane. I know they have a sham marriage, but they've been together for a long time.
And it makes you wonder how, you know, with him directing any of her strategy, she ever got to the position she's in. If he's, you know, not if he's making these faux pas here in private, I mean, what must he do in public?
Right.
So, yeah. Dev comes back to the meeting room at NASA with an idea to use the principles. You might have really enjoyed this. The principles of grain entrapment to set off a bomb inside the lava tube beneath Hab 1 in order to drain the regolith from above it. It's actually a pretty ingenious solution.
Yeah, there's if you want to get the deep lore on grain entrapment, you're gonna have to Google bald move witness and witness that Harrison Ford podcast because so if my dad worked at NASA, he would get the 1,000-yard Vietnam flashback stare. And they started talking about it'll flow like grain, and Will and Roland should have been really sweating about being underneath and all that flowing grain.
Yeah, it's a great idea. It's like so out of the box, right? Like that's the thing. You think, okay, well, we got to dig down and get them. What if we? And I wonder how it works in 1/3 gravity. It doesn't work exactly like they expect. There's so many risks around it too, which I like.
And it's also, it's not just out of the box, but like also a ability to marshal a lot of data, like the map that they're looking at, the locations of the stuff, mentally overlaying the lava tube locations and realizing the opportunity was there. And it is crazy. It's audacious. But like Margo said, it's doable. And yes, there are problems, but they're engineering challenges where all engineers get to work. I thought this was
No other alternatives, right? That's
yeah.
That's the thing. Anybody got a better solution? Anybody got a way to dig 20 meters before?
This is like Elon Musk. If Elon Musk actually had saved those poor kids trapped in the mine instead of calling the guy who actually did a pedophile. You know, like it's a legitimately awesome, amazing engineering thing to do.
Yes.
So, yeah, Dev, a little bit of a heroic figure in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, everybody decides that's the best option. And then we go back to Danny and Ed. Well, Danny still wants to give up, and Ed tries to talk some hope into him. But Danny starts talking about Shane and in not the, the kindest ways, and Ed hits him. And then Danny hits him back, and it tears Ed's guts apart. The shrapnel in his guts just rip him open. He starts bleeding profusely, and Danny has to seal up the wound with some kind of clotting compound, or I don't know what it is, but apparently it gets
used to have out. Like, was it called sulfa that in like World War II they pour it in the wound and it would rapidly coagulate? I'm sure they got better shit now. I mean,
yeah,
my God,
seen this stuff,
they've gotten really good at patching people up in the last 10-20 years, but
I don't know what you call it now.
Yeah, I don't either. He said it was something, a quick clotting agent, he said, to pour it in. It looks like it's painful. Looks like it burns, like at least as bad as hydrogen peroxide in an open wound.
Yes.
But this is what's great about this is it draws on three decades of character history very effectively for Ed to try to dad up and be like, you can't give up hope. I saw in MASH that, you know, when fucking Radar had his glasses smeared, that Hawkeye said that war's hell, father, because and he's like, you know what, fuck you, you were a terrible, you're not my dad, and you were a terrible dad, your son is afraid of you, he opened up and blossomed when you weren't around, like, really?
It's gonna come back around later too, is the thing that I love about it, like,
right,
okay, you were a terrible dad and he was scared of you, and then he became a full person when he was away from you, but like, then I took advantage of that, like, that's the other thing, Danny exploited that, right, to get into trouble, pull hijinks, and blame it all on Shane. Yeah,
but also rough. It interlocks with Ed's like be a man, because he, you know, when Danny rhetorically asks what kind of man gets his jollies from bullying little boys, their own son, then, you know, I think that's part of him meditating on his last words to Shane, because be a man, like, I, you know, what kind of example of a man did I show him? And if I had done something a little bit differently, because you got to see the Ed, these are not spoken, but Ed's got to feel like, man, if I hadn't blown up Shane's spot and made him feel like that he's let everybody down, and he's got to be a man, which means solving his own problems. You wouldn't have a 12-year-old peddling to school and getting his ass ran over. So,
yeah, like, I mean, again, his be a man philosophy has blown up in his face every time.
Yeah. And
even with Gordo, like,
even with Gordo,
Gordo became a hero, but he got fucking killed. Like,
yes.
Don't forget that. They're both dead.
And we don't know how that would have worked if they would have lived up there for another, like, it. Yeah. Gordo was an outlier, and Ed thinks it's the blueprint.
But I think that facade, that idea has to be crumbling, right? Like, the idea that he magically cured Gordo, I mean, it's untested. You know, he went up there, sure, and he became a hero, sure, but like, that was all, the experiment was prematurely ended.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Ed's like starting to recontextualize even that a little bit. Like, maybe that wasn't the best path, you know, or that maybe he's starting to realize he was an outlier, and it's not going to work for everybody. It certainly didn't work for Shane. Certainly hasn't worked for Danny.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but it's a very good scene, and the episode just loaded with very good scenes.
Yeah. And it's also like, I've always got the impression that like they're being a little a little punchy because of the carbon dioxide, you know, so it's like, it's almost like they're a little drunk. So the truth is really starting to come out, which adds to the tension, because you're like, oh, Jesus, what is Danny going to say next?
Yeah, I don't think they've gotten to that point yet. There's a scene later where like the CO2 scrubbers are max, and
well, Ed says in this scene that the carbon dioxide scrubbers are full, so the carbon dioxide is at a bed. Yeah, it's not obviously, but like, you know, they could be a little bit woozy.
Sure, sure. All right, the team on Mars gets the news about NASA's plan. That's Danielle's team, and Will and Roland volunteer to execute that plan.
After Danielle shames them, I'll fucking do it myself.
Yeah.
Watch me.
Yeah, she volunteers, and then they're like, no, we'll volunteer. Yeah. You just don't have the skills, I guess. You're not the explosive expert.
She's not an expert exploder.
Mm-hmm. Master exploder. Jimmy's sitting out by the pool when Karen finds him, and he says he knew about her and Danny, and then they sit and talk about why she did it and how everyone used and pressured Danny with their expectations. And of course, I mean, it's not something I actively thought about, but this scene really brings it into focus. Of course, Jimmy also experienced these same expectations. He just reacted entirely different to them, right? He rebelled against them instead of his brother trying to fit himself into that mold.
And it might be because, like, did he rebel because he wanted to, or did he kind of try and just couldn't fit that mold?
Could be.
You know, like Danny could be an approximation of Shane, but like Jimmy's just too, and like, I don't know, maybe he could be too, but he's the youngest. He wasn't maybe as athletically gifted or talent. So like, for whatever reason, sure, Jimmy didn't feel like he could. So he went the other way. Yeah. It's a piece of the puzzle. And then we get another piece of the puzzle at the end of this episode, and they fit together really nicely. And I felt like the Karen, other than going back in time and not fucking her surrogate son, handled this about as well as she could. She wasn't defensive.
Yes.
She came clean pretty quickly and then didn't deflect the blame.
It shows how much growth she's experienced too from that moment.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, she's angry. She doesn't know how to feel about it or process it. And so she ends up fucking this kid. And then, as compared to now, right, when she has matured and had time to think about, you know, why she did what she did, and the choices she makes in her life in general, I think it just, it's a nice moment of showing the growth that Karen's experienced too.
Yeah.
There's a cornhole board in the background, which I found interesting. I was not aware that maybe this is progressed technology that we see, you know, a direct result of the space race continuing.
Cornhole migrated out of the Midwest a lot earlier than in our prime timeline, apparently.
Yeah, 94-95. I certainly was not aware of cornhole until 2000s, like early 2000s, but that's just me.
Some astronaut from Ohio popularized it by playing it on the moon, and the 100 meter cornhole competitions that they got up to are legendary.
Uh-huh. Have to use binoculars to see your target.
Uh-huh.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun fan favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
So Karen coming clean and leveling and not doing a cover up. Do you think this is going to be a turning point in Jimmy? Because like, I actually think part of his conspiracy thing is like every authority figure has lied to him and everything is bullshit and no one tells the truth. And like Karen, like leveling and then connecting with them over their mutual hatred of the horrors of space. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it is combined with him, you know, feeling part of this family at the end, if that will be enough to like bring him out of it, or if it's like the last little moment that they'll have before he goes fully into La La Land.
That's the thing. So this is a moment with him, and I feel like it's a big moment, but also it's just a moment. And the constant influence of his friends could push him further in the conspiratorial direction.
Yeah. The conspiracy girl is a big, big deal, big angle.
Absolutely. Yeah. Who's now either his fake girlfriend or his real girlfriend. I can't tell. But yeah, I think there's an opportunity here, certainly, if Karen stays in the picture and then kind of guides him through the next few months. I think she could pull him out of this spiral. But you could also see this as like, why would he trust that Karen is actually telling him the truth in any meaningful way?
Because she'll seduce him.
Great.
It's the one card she can play. It's the one card she can play to make it all go away. It's the only way she can outplay the conspiracy girlfriend.
It's true.
She has to be the rational MILF that leads him back to the land of reason.
Truly have learned nothing if this comes to be.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, no, she's going to go try to collect them. Try to catch them all. All the Pokemon.
Yep.
All the Stevens Pokemon evolutions.
All right, Kelly and Peloton return to Hab 2, and Peloton is really ill, and they have to drill a hole in his head to relieve the pressure.
Yep.
What the fuck does he say on the table here? So there are like partial subtitles on this episode, and I used them for the early going, but this scene didn't have them, and I think he said something about being blood kin.
Yeah, I think it's a multi-level joke that, yeah, he's getting a transfusion from Kelly, who literally isn't a blood relative of Ed Baldwin, but she's his adoptive daughter. And so he's kind of making a roundabout joke about like space royalty blood in my veins. You know,
I just couldn't understand what he was saying because of the accent and his distress. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was cute. It was cute him putting a brave face on, you know, her volunteering to be the, and of course them cross-checking her blood is what's going to reveal the fact that she is, that there really is life on Mars blooming, and it's in her womb.
I wasn't sure if this sentence made any sense in context. This could have been like his ballooning brain just malfunctioning and him just saying words.
It's word salad.
Yeah. I really didn't know. Anyway, Will and Roland double check and triple check their bomb placement and then wire up the trigger and head for a safe distance down the lava
tubes.
Like
they say, measure twice, explode once.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the way you do it. And it's like this scene is all about like Roland and Will back on the path towards reconciliation. They're busting each other's chops and they're joking and they're rebuilding their relationship through this shared trauma.
Sure. Now that Roland is in a hermetically sealed chamber of spacesuit,
do you think he's going to keep all the start all this shit again? Like, at some point, the man's a scientist of some sort, and I want that to carry the day. You know, like,
sure, I understand an emotional reaction in the moment when you find out, but also, come on, man, are you a rational thinking human being or not?
Yeah,
and are you a compassionate human being or not? I don't know. CO2 levels are climbing with Ed and Danny, and they are freezing. Danny decides now's a great time to tell Ed about his and Karen's sexcapade, but before he can get it out, the bomb goes off beneath him. There's a lot going on in this scene. This is the scene we were talking about with the confessions about Shane and how Danny used him, and Shane forgave him every time.
And they don't. That was never resolved back in the season one. Like, because I remember when Karen and Tracy went to the school, and they thought it was Danny that was causing all the problems. Because of course, you know, their parents aren't around, and they're a little bit more wild children. And they said, "Oh no, it's Shane, the ringleader." That I think that was the official point of the show. There wasn't anything to like push back on that. But now, three seasons later, Danny's saying it was always me. I was the one that was instigating all this stuff. I was the one acting out. And he feels personally connected to Shane's death. And his entire life, from the time he's a 12-year-old little boy, is trying to live the life he stole from his best friend. Yeah. Oh, my God. And it's Joel Kinnaman's face when he's hearing this kid talk, just like processing all of that stuff. I thought it was genuinely emotionally affecting.
Absolutely. And then to top it all off, it's like now he's done the same thing to his kid and wife, right? He's leaving
Amber
and Avery behind, just like his parents left him behind.
Not only have I fucked up trying to live my best friend's life, but now I've perpetuated the cycle that fucked me up.
Yeah.
And it's great. Even Ed doing his worst Stallone impersonation with the boom, even he couldn't rob it of his drama. I actually thought that was great, but him mocking himself, but it was a little Yo Adrian.
A little bit, yeah. A
couple of those takes.
The scene started off a little rocky for me because Ed is now the one who doesn't want to get into the spacesuit, right? I'm looking at that and I have to like sit there and think about, okay, why is Ed's mind changed here? And
he's hypoxic.
It's because he's not in his right mind, but B, I think he's feeling extreme guilt about, you know, all the damage he's caused to his son and to everyone in his life through this be a man philosophy, right?
He spent the last hour or two thinking about how this is all his fault. And Danny's been spending a few hours meditating on how it's actually his fault. And then they can come. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great scene.
I just thought it was great. I thought, Ed's great. And again, they suckered me when that explosion went off. Even though I should have seen it coming a mile away, right at the most dramatically appropriate time.
I have something else I have to tell you, Ed.
Boom.
Kaboo. Yep. And they drop down into the lava tubes, I assume. No, they don't. All right. In the morning, NASA calls Danny's house to let them know that Ed and Danny are alive. Man, this is another great moment. And this one is so understated. It's just Amber and Jimmy hugging with the relief shining through any conspiracies that are in their mind, any, stuff like... Danny probably hasn't been in very close contact with Amber for a long time. None of that stuff matters in the moment. It's just pure joy.
It's pure relief. That's the thing. It's relief. Not because Jimmy's not sobbing with like joy. It's just pure relief, catharsis. Like, oh my God, I'm not going to have to say goodbye to my brother. It's so well acted. I thought, but everyone here, I don't give a shit about Amber, but like I was like really choking back tears and all these scenes because they just kept on, the emotion just kept on feeding like a wave. And it still like keeps on going into the scene with Kelly and Ed that we're about to get to.
And they do all this with a jump cut to the next day. We don't even get to see the plan playing out. But Ed wakes up in Hab 2 to find out that Peloton, Castillo, and Nick are all dead.
Real missed high bob opportunity. Missed high bob opportunity. Danielle reading the Bible, like, I was hoping Ed would croak out a high bob to continue our podcast relevance, especially if my dire prediction about everyone here not making, like, they're high bob's done. High bob's Could done be. season four if no one makes it off Mars here.
Yeah, I have to change our name to Bye Bob.
Oh, Jesus.
Right. Kelly is devastated and Ed tries to comfort her. And Danny over in the corner tries to hide his shame.
Danny feels like he would like to do that Homer Simpson thing where he steps into the bushes and disappears, except for it's the walls of the Hab. He could just leave his body behind. Because, what do you do? What do you say? How do you ever live this shit down?
You can't. You have to learn to live with it.
You gotta go to the therapist from Breaking Bad that got over backing over his 6-year-old child when he was drunk. At some point you gotta either,
because right now he's a problem dog.
Yeah, you either gotta stop living or find a way to live with yourself. But man, I don't envy the shame.
No, and I really think the shame could lead him down even. I don't know. It's hard to go down a worse cycle with the fucking pills and the mistakes he's making, but could perpetuate that cycle. I think he's going to try once again to cover it up.
And they got to get back. Everyone's still got to do a very hard thing to return home safely.
No, they're out of the immediate danger, but now the hard work of figuring out how they get the hell off this planet.
You know, a lot of people predicted that he would do some kind of sacrifice or get Ed killed. Man, I feel like they are setting up a heroic sacrifice. But I wouldn't feel good about it because he himself knows what he's doing to his child. There's no good answers. No good answers left.
No, there's not. I mean, the only good answer is that they can get everybody back up to the Phoenix and somehow return the Phoenix home or send a rescue mission and it all works out. But yeah, it's all about salvaging this thing at this point.
Yeah.
So here's another scene I really like. The NASA meeting room clears out because the job's done. And Dev and Margo share a silent moment of respect for each other. And then Margo revels in the accomplishment just for a moment. And this is what Margo loves about NASA, right? Their resourcefulness, their ingenuity, their get the job done attitude. She really has a moment of pride here, and it's all tainted, right, by her having given the Russians this technology and still being under their thumb to some degree. But it's a nice moment for Margo.
It's a nice moment, and to the extent that it feels like a final moment. This feels there's two episodes left. I think the other shoe's going to drop. I think by the end of this season, Margo's going to no longer be part of NASA. Yeah, I don't mean she's going to die. I mean, she's
I thought you meant we just weren't going to see her again. I'm like, what?
No. This is one last moment of triumph where, she helped lead NASA doing this very difficult thing, a joint operation with the Soviets, private sector. She's just really master of her domain. And I feel like this is the last kind of moment of happiness for her. I Margo's been a lot this season. I don't wish her well or wish her harm, but it does feel like that's probably the consequences of her actions.
I think you're right. And then the final scene here is the doctor asking the Russian commander what they should do about Kelly's pregnancy. We called it. He says they'll first tell Moscow about it.
And then I don't understand the danger. Is he just speaking broadly? What is the danger?
There might be some thing we don't know about. I'm not sure if the Russians had a plan to
Mars babies rip themselves out of the womb and come out with sharp teeth and claws, I get it. It's an inconvenient situation. I don't know. Do you have crash couches for babies? But putting everyone at risk is a weird thing to say. If he said it's a very risky thing to bring life on Mars, or I don't know if the baby's going to come back, or there's going to be is it a delicate geopolitical dual citizenship kind of thing? What is the putting whole crew at risk?
I mean, is it the crew that's at risk, or is it their mission, whatever their mission is?
He said it puts the whole crew at risk.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know how that would be true.
And like, yeah, how is it a political? I mean, I don't know. I guess everything's a political question. But like, I really scratch my head at how ominous this conversation was.
Yeah, I am too. I'm not sure how that factors in, but
he's not saying we're not going to tell anybody. So we're going to tell Moscow and her commander before we tell her. Right.
Yeah, Danielle.
And maybe that's like the doesn't sit right with the doctor because he feels like he should go and tell the patient directly. But at least the commander's saying they are going to, you know, the truth will come out. They're not going to like, and they, like even the doctor said, like, you know, at some point this girl's going to know.
Yep.
I don't know. Yeah, the whole crew at risk. That's a big claim.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's it for the episode.
That's it. That is the episode. If you'd like to send us feedback, it's FAM. It stands for All Mankind. FAM at baldmove.com. We will probably have a email roundup next week. Because I did a lot of travel this week and we didn't have time to do it, but we're going to try to get back to it next week. Appreciate everyone listening. So we'll be back here this time next week to go over the latest episode. We're in the penultimate. Like, man, blink and this season's over. We'll see how we bring the astronauts home. Astronauts are coming home. What all political pregnancy questions have been raised. We'll get to that next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.